Inc.com.
It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it is your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 40 degrees out, under a fog mist. Out at the airport, they are showing 100% humidity, east winds to 7 miles per hour, and they are down to 2 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for a 50% chance of rain for the rest of the day, mostly cloudy skies, high near 39, southeast winds to 5. And rain is likely tonight, at least until 3 a.m. or so. Cloudy skies overnight with a low of 36, calm winds turning to the northwest to 5 this evening. They are calling for partly sunny skies tomorrow and mostly sunny skies on Thursday. Coming up on the Midday Report, the Kodiak Island Borough has approved taking $12 million from the state to help with school bond debt reimbursement. Alaska's Lieutenant Governor has certified an application for a petition to get rid of the state's ranked choice voting system. And more stories after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. California communities are reeling from a series of mass shootings in just 3 days. Rachel Myro of member station KQED reports one of the attacks that claimed 7 lives in Half Moon Bay in the San Francisco Bay Area is being treated as a case of workplace violence.
The suspect, 66-year-old Chun Li Zhao, is a resident of Half Moon Bay. His semi-automatic handgun was legally purchased and owned. Zhao was employed at Mountain Mushroom Farm, one of the locations where he allegedly opened fire. The victims, 7 dead and 1 wounded, are all Asian and Latino adults. San Mateo County Sheriff Christina Corpus.
All of the evidence we have points to this being the instance of workplace violence.
The coroner's office is still working on victim identifications and notifying next of kin, a task complicated by the fact some of the victims are migrants. For NPR News, I'm Rachel Myro.
Hours after last night's shootings, police responded to another at a gas station in Oakland that killed 1 person and injured 7 others. A mass shooting Saturday night during Lunar New Year celebrations claimed 11 lives. Forecasters are monitoring a tornado moving just south of the Houston metro area that has the potential to cause catastrophic damage. They say it's part of a strong system moving through Texas this afternoon. Lawyers for former Vice President Mike Pence say they've discovered classified documents at his home in Indiana. NPR's Windsor Johnson reports the FBI and the Justice Department have launched a review of the records, as they've also done in similar cases involving former President Donald Trump and President Biden, to find out how and why the material ended up there.
According to Pence's legal team, a small number of documents with classified markings were inadvertently boxed and taken to his home at the end of the last administration. It's not clear what the records are related to or their level of classification. Pence is widely seen as a Republican presidential contender in 2024, but has yet to declare his candidacy.
NPR's Windsor Johnston reporting. The Justice Department in 8 states have filed a lawsuit against Google over its digital advertising business. NPR's Bobby Allen reports the suit seeks to have Google's ad operations spun off from the rest of the company.
Federal and state authorities say Google's dominance of online advertising is, quote, neither accidental nor inevitable. Prosecutors say the tech giant built systems that give its products a leg up and enable the company's advertising empire to become globally dominant. That, the lawsuit says, violates antitrust laws. Authorities are asking a federal judge to order the breakup of Google's ad empire. About 80% of Google's revenue comes from online advertising. And prosecutors say the company has intentionally stifled rivals to maintain its power. Google did not return a request for comment. It is the second antitrust case Justice Department lawyers have brought against the tech giant's ad business. Bobby Allen, NPR News.
From Washington, this is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Kodiak Island Borough Assembly approved more than $12 million in school bond debt reimbursement payments at last week's meeting. The money comes from a bill passed by the state legislature last year, which appropriated an additional $220 million of funding to the School Construction Debt Reimbursement Program after shorting the program since 2017. The state has cut the budget for the fund by 25% in 2017, 50% in 2020, 100% in 2021, and 63% in 2022. The money will be split between the various borough budgets that suffered funding cuts through the years. The general fund will receive over $5.3 million, and the facilities fund will receive $2.2 million. The school district, as well as the renewal and replacement fund, will receive nearly $1.6 million each. The remaining funds will be split between the roof and skylight repairs at East and North Star Elementary Schools, which will receive $700,000 each. Alaska's lieutenant governor has certified an application for a petition that, if successful, would get rid of the state's ranked choice voting system and nonpartisan primary. Sponsor Art Mathias wants to go back to the traditional election system, in which a candidate from each official party has a guaranteed spot on the general election ballot in each race. Mathias says the new system forced candidates to hold their tongues to avoid rankling the supporters of their opponents.
You got to be nice to them, or they won't rank you second. Well, they won't rank you third. If you do anything to their any disagreement with the other people and their views, then they're not going to like you, and their people aren't going to rank you second or third. It shuts down all free expression.
At the same time, Mathias blames the new election system for making Alaska politics meaner.
This is a primary season that lasted the entire election cycle. Just dirty nastiness the entire time, and no honest exchange of ideas.
Alaska voters adopted the new voting system in 2020 and used it for the first time in 2022. Proponents of the ranked choice voting system and nonpartisan primary say the new system curbs extremism on the left and the right. Mathias's group, Alaskans for Honest Elections, is now waiting for its petition booklets and will have a year to collect the more than 26,000 signatures necessary to put the measure on the ballot in 2024. Like many areas in Alaska, Petersburg has a housing shortage. Their housing task force has been working since fall to find ways to create more available housing. The task force recently requested $55,000 in funding from Petersburg's Borough Assembly for a study known as a housing needs assessment. They say it's an important step to secure grant funding for housing projects in the future. The Assembly approved the full $55,000, but not without some disagreement. KFSK's Rachel Cassandra has more.
Some members were skeptical that the Assembly needed to spend the cost of a mid-sized luxury car to figure out that Petersburg had a housing problem. Here's Assembly member Tom Fine-Walsh.
I have a hard time justifying $55,000 for an outside company to come and interview us and just ask us what we think we need and then charge us $55,000 for our answers. That seems ridiculous.
In a later interview, Assemblymember Bob Lynn says he has a deep respect for the task force and their work, but he says he doesn't want to throw money at the issue without a crystal clear understanding of what the borough would get from the investment.
My hesitancy is that I'm worried that we're going to go down the road and keep spending money. And at the end, it pushes the borough into us having to, one, take a much greater responsibility in housing and or, two, raising mill rate in order to pay for something along those lines or redistributing wealth.
Fine-Walsh ultimately came around, and the Assembly voted 4-2 to approve the $55,000 study. Assembly members Donna Marsh and Bob Lynn voted no. It will be funded by leftover COVID relief money. Jalen Pomrenke is housing director at the Petersburg Indian Association. She says the assessment is a first step to getting grant funding.
A lot of the ideas that the Housing Task Force has been coming up with rely on funding from outside sources, and a lot of those funding opportunities require a housing needs assessment for any type of application. So we've decided that this would be the first step to getting these ideas off the ground.
She says the study won't just look at housing needs. She says it will be a more holistic look at housing assets and shortages.
I've been calling it a housing needs assessment. I feel like the better way to identify it is a housing and needs assessment, where they'll take stock of resources in Petersburg and specific programs that are running here and kind of tell us where, you know, you're doing really good at this. You could do a little bit more on this side.
Pomrenke says the assessment will also be a resource for nonprofit organizations working in Petersburg.
It's not just something that the borough can utilize. It's something that other entities in Petersburg can utilize as well, too, when they're making grant decisions and applications. It's a key to a door that we couldn't open without it.
The task force has explored available housing grants, including some through the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, or HUD. In one grant, the federal agency offers communities up to $500,000 to transform unused stores and warehouses in town into low-income housing. But even the assessment likely won't be enough to win funding for Petersburg housing projects on its own. The borough's Community and Economic Development Director, Liz Cabrera, says the borough may also need a housing grant specialist later on.
Because these are highly complicated grants, applications that you're going to be putting forward. Generally for HUD, they are really complicated. And then the other end of it is implementation. You know, there's no such thing as free money, and those grant funds come with lots of strings.
Anchorage-based Agnew Beck Consulting will put together the housing needs assessment for Petersburg. It's the same company that completed the borough's comprehensive plan update in 2016. In Petersburg, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
Teachers, school administrators, and parents rallied outside the Capitol building Monday night to call for increased education funding. Alaska funds school districts through a formula called the Base Student Allocation, or BSA. It determines the amount of money per student a district gets from the state. Cheyenne Quaylar teaches science at Zonti Kahini Middle School in Juneau. She discussed the BSA on Juneau Afternoon last week.
Since 2017, it's only increased 0.5%. But as many of us know, inflation's increased 15.4%. And so districts across the state are really feeling the impact of this.
Music teacher Mike Busey says the lack of education funding is impacting negotiations with teachers' unions. The Juneau Teachers Union declared an impasse in its negotiations with the school district last month. Teachers and staff in Fairbanks have had similar problems.
In the classroom, you feel that there's not the resources, more and more students with fewer and fewer resources year after year. And that all goes back to the formula funding.
State funding also affects districts' abilities to hire other workers like paraprofessionals who work with special needs students. Busey says budget cuts hurt students, especially when class sizes go up.
I know one of the sixth grade teachers this year started with 43 kids in his class. Sixth graders, these are 11-year-olds, 43 of them, many of them with special needs. How on earth is he going to help a student that's struggling with something in that class? It's impossible.
The Alaska Association of School Boards has also called for a defined benefit retirement plan for teachers. Juneau Senator Jesse Keel has introduced a bill to give public workers, including teachers, the option to pay into a pension. A Soldotna physical education teacher was fired last month, 7 years after he was injured in a car accident that launched a complicated insurance contract dispute with the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. KDLL's Riley Board has more on the dispute and Matt Fisher's appeal to get back to school.
Matt Fisher has been a PE coach at Skyview Middle School for more than 2 decades, and he considers himself a reliable presence in his students' lives.
The kids know I have never skipped a single rep in my life. No matter how hard the workout is, no matter how bad I feel, I will not skip it.
That is, until he was terminated by the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District in mid-December on the grounds of, quote, immorality and substantial noncompliance with state or school laws. Now, Fisher is appealing the termination and has a hearing scheduled at the end of the month. The incident dates back to 2015, when Fisher was struck head-on by another vehicle while driving home from work. Following the accident, Fisher underwent several surgeries, including one for a broken femur. The surgeries and damages were covered by the other driver's insurance policy, as well as by a secondary insurance policy Fisher had. He says he notified the district about that settlement by mail and email after he received it. But according to court documents, the district says it never got that notice and instead paid off Fisher's medical bills through its own insurance policy. When the district found out about the settlement with the other driver's insurance, it charged Fisher to recoup what it had paid, more than $150,000. Fisher said he couldn't pay back the money then, and the district sued. Ultimately, the courts determined Fisher owed about $164,000 to the district, plus interest.
In the end, the court said, I'm wrong. Okay, we wrote the check.
Then last summer, the district told Fisher they would accept a portion of the cost he owed in exchange for his resignation from his teaching position. At that time, Fisher said he would pay the full amount, but he says the district refused a check, and a month later asked him to pack up his things on the grounds that he had stolen money from the district. Fisher has suspicions about why he was terminated, in part because he worked as a negotiator for the teachers' union at the time of the accident. He emailed the district to claim harassment after they requested his resignation, asking that the connection between his bargaining and termination be investigated.
There is nothing in that civil suit that would tie it to my job.
Fisher says he has not heard any response from the district. The district has gone through 3 superintendents since Fisher's situation began, as well as 3 HR directors and a near-complete turnover on the Board of Education. Nate Crabtree, the district's human resources director, was unable to answer specific questions about the nature or timing of Fisher's termination. He said, quote, the district takes all personnel matters seriously and in accordance with law. Because this situation involves ongoing litigation and a confidential personnel matter, the district is unable to provide any further comment. A packed house of students and parents turned out to a Board of Education meeting earlier this month to show their support for Fisher and ask that his termination be reversed. One of those students was Kate Cox.
The first day he was not at school was very sad. Many people were in tears and upset that he was gone, including me. It has been a big disruption for us to lose a teacher in the middle of a year. I hope you can reconsider and allow him to come back to school because he is irreplaceable.
Students spoke about how he inspired them to care about athletics and showed up early to supervise basketball or workouts. Several parents also spoke on Fisher's behalf, many asking how his insurance dispute became connected to his job performance. Fisher says being at the board meeting, hearing all of his students speak, almost brought him to tears.
These aren't just kids. These are kids that I love. These are kids that I would do anything for.
Fisher is appealing his termination, and he chose to have a hearing in front of the Board of Education, open to the public. He requested the meeting be scheduled at a time that parents and students could attend, but the district set the hearing for midday on Tuesday, January 31st. At the hearing, Fisher says he will not be allowed to present any new evidence nor speak because it's designed to just be a review of the causes for termination. But he says he's looking forward to the opportunity for a public discussion about his situation.
You got to bring things into the light. You can't keep it in the darkness, and that's what's happened with this whole thing.
If the board affirms his termination, the case will move on to arbitration. Fisher says the arbitration process could last until the summer. In Soldotna, I'm Riley Board.
After a roller coaster couple of years, Alaska's state government revenues are returning to a more normal pattern, the Alaska Beacon reports. That's according to Dan Stickle, the chief economist at the State Department of Revenue, who testified before the Senate Finance Committee on Friday. It's a change from recent years, which saw oil prices move from ultra-low levels to last June's 10-year high, along with investment earnings that veered between a record high in 2021 to the first net losses since 2009 in 2022. Stickle says the COVID-19 pandemic, followed by the war in Ukraine, brought havoc to both oil markets and financial markets, and the Alaska Treasury has taken the impacts, both good and bad. He cautioned that those disruptive forces remain and could again upend normal patterns. The bad news for state revenue is a downward drift in oil prices. The department's forecast for the current fiscal year's revenues total $1.1 billion less than what was expected just last spring. And University of Alaska Fairbanks cross-country skiers went 1-2 in the final race of the World University Games. Nanook teammates Mario Pulis of Estonia took gold, and Kendall Kramer of Fairbanks silver, finishing less than 1 second apart in the women's 15-kilometer freestyle race at Lake Placid, New York, on Sunday. It was Pulis' second gold and fourth medal of the Games.
Business activity slows for the seventh straight month. I'm Novosava with a Marketplace Minute. S&P Global says business activity in January registered a slowdown, but the declines moderated in both the services and manufacturing sectors. Services improved the most. Firms involved in things such as transportation and communications also were more upbeat about their expectations for the coming year. Meanwhile, business activity among the 20 countries that use the euro currency turned positive this month. It was the first sign of modest growth since June, in large part thanks to retreating energy prices. Manufacturing conglomerate 3M plans to cut 2,500 jobs worldwide. It's seeing sales declines in its consumer products division for items such as air purifiers and respirators. I'm Novosava with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, a leader in commercial real estate.
It's a tough time, but each of us can make a difference in the lives of Alaskans. All you have to do is give via Pick, Click, Give by supporting Alaska's nonprofits when you apply for your PFD. You aren't just donating. You're giving more opportunity, more hope, more chances. You're changing the lives of Alaskans with the click of a button. Don't forget to Pick, Click, Give when you fill out your PFD application this year.
¿Tiene curiosidad sobre el desarrollo de su hijo? El programa de aprendizaje infantil de Cana, Head Start the Rural Cap y el Distrito Escolar de Kodiak Island Borough están ofreciendo una evaluación basada en el juego, sin costo, para niños recién nacidos hasta los 5 años, el 4 de febrero, de 10 a.m. a 2 p.m. en la Escuela Primaria East. Puedes programar una cita llamando al 907-486-7574. Se prefieren citas, pero se aceptarán visitas sin previo aviso.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 24th day of January, the year 2023. The sun rose at 9:27. It will set again at 5:16. That will give us 7 hours and 49 minutes of glorious daylight, a gain of 3 minutes and 59 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 51 degrees, set in 1950. And our record low was minus 5, set in 1947, and then again in 2012. Currently 40 degrees outside under a fog mist. They have 100% humidity at the airport, east winds to 7 miles per hour, and they are down to 2 miles of visibility. Look for mostly cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon with a high near 39, southeast winds to 5. For tonight, rain is likely between 7 p.m. and 4 a.m., cloudy skies tonight, too, with a low around 36. Calm winds turning to the northwest to 5 this evening. And for tomorrow, a 30% chance of rain before afternoon, turning to partly sunny skies tomorrow afternoon with a high near 40, west winds to 10, turning to the south to 15 in the afternoon, could gust as high as 25 tomorrow. And for Wednesday night, mostly cloudy, becoming mostly clear, low of 33, south winds to 15, and sunny skies on Thursday with a high near 37 and southwest winds to 10. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up this afternoon. That will happen at 3:32 here on the east side and be a 10-foot tide. It'll be followed by a low tide at 10:04 p.m. with a significant drop, minus 1.6 feet for our low tide at 10 o'clock. Over on the west side, that high tide will happen at 4:04 this afternoon and be 15.7 feet in Larsen Bay, followed by a low tide at 10:39 p.m. of minus 2.4 feet. Mariners, here is your forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkin at Kodiak's east side offshore. Small craft advisory through Wednesday. For today, southeast 20, seas to 14 feet. For tonight, northeast 20, becoming west after midnight, seas to 12 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest 25, seas to 14 feet. I bet that those will be pretty sloppy seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, small craft advisory through tomorrow. Variable 15, becoming northeast 20 this afternoon, seas to 4 feet. Northeast 15 tonight, becoming southwest after midnight, seas to 4 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest 30, seas to 8 feet. The following are upcoming Kodiak Island Borough public meetings. On Thursday, January 26th, Fire Protection Area Number 1 will be having a board work session at the Bayside Fire Hall. That's happening at 6 p.m. Also on January 26th, the Assembly will be having a work session in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 6:30 p.m. On Tuesday, January 31st, the Assembly will be having a special meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 11:30 a.m. And on Wednesday, February 1st, the Assembly will be having a special meeting in the Borough Assembly Chambers at 12:15 p.m. And the Assembly will be having a regular meeting on February 2nd at 6:30 p.m. in the Borough Assembly Chambers. These meetings are open to the public, and the meeting packets are available on the Kodiak Island Borough website. Contact the Borough Clerk's Office at 907-486-9310 with any questions. Assembly meetings are live-streamed on the Kodiak Island Borough YouTube channel. Subscribe to get live-stream notifications. Just a little early on that one. The Kodiak City Council will be having a work session tonight that will begin at 7:30 p.m. and be held in the Kodiak Public Library. They will also be having a regular meeting on Thursday night, also at 7:30 p.m., also in the public library. Both meetings are open to the public, and the public is also encouraged to tune in right here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meetings will also be web-streamed, and that link, as well as meeting packets, are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you need more information, contact the city clerk at 907-486-8636. Tomorrow, the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge is hosting the Families Understanding Nature program. That's happening at 12 p.m. tomorrow at the Kodiak Refuge Visitor Center. It's a free program designed for kids 2 to 5 years of age and their families. The refuge will provide a story, snacks, and activities on the topic of animal tracks. So lots of fun for your children 2 to 5 years old. That's tomorrow at 12 p.m. at the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. The Kodiak Refuge is also hosting a nature journaling night. It's free for adults, teens, and youth with adult supervision. Stop by any time between 4 and 6 p.m. on Thursday. Bring your own supplies or use provided supplies. The theme will be creating snow imagery with watercolors. No experience is necessary. That sounds like a lot of fun, too. And again, that's happening on Thursday between 4 and 6 p.m. at the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. The Kodiak Senior Center is once again in need of paper bags, so please bring your clean, untorn paper bags to the Senior Center for our home-delivered lunch and pick-up meal services. And again, please bring clean, untorn bags. And the Kodiak Refuge Salmon Camp registration lottery is open. The Kodiak Wildlife Refuge will be having summer science camps for students going into kindergarten through 8th grade. Find registration packets on the Kodiak Refuge website or stop by the Kodiak Wildlife Refuge Visitor Center. Packets are available right at the front door or inside during open hours, which is Wednesday through Friday, 12 p.m. to 4 p.m., and you need to enter that lottery by March 31st.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.